Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Well, welcome to the show, the DL Link Show on 101.9 Chai FM, the show where we connect you through insights and information and illumination. We had a very exciting show last week with the charity event, and we will be giving you feedback and we'll be giving you updates, and that will be coming up in a couple of weeks' time. But today we're going to be looking at ovarian cancer with Dr. Trudy Smith, and a really, really important discussion, because ovarian cancer is not always easily detected at the early stages because of the symptoms. So we're going to be talking about that. And then we're going to be chatting to a personal trainer who's going to see if mid-year, because usually we hit the mid-year slump, like we're feeling amazing in January, it's summer, we're feeling fabulous. We hit this time of the year, it's a little bit cold, and it just seems a little bit more appealing to stay home and eat something delicious and not necessarily go out and exercise. So we're going to have a bit of a reset and get ourselves back into a healthy state of mind. But starting off, as I say, Dr. Trudy Smith, who is no stranger to the show. It is always a pleasure and a delight to have Dr. Smith on the show. She's a gynecology oncologist at Fitzdonald Gordon Medical Center, a senior lecturer at the University of the Witwatersrand, and really an expert in the field. So May the 8th is World Ovarian Cancer Day. And why is this important? Well, we need to be looking at all hereditary risk factors, factors for developing ovarian cancer, the new treatments that are out there, and what we can be doing go for the right checkups and early detection where possible. So Trudy, welcome. So lovely having you on the show.
Thank you for having me again. It's always a pleasure.
Well, always a pleasure for us as well. And especially, you know, talking about ovarian cancer, and we have discussed it before, and, you know, obviously there are people who know very little about ovarian cancer. What I do know is that it's the fifth cancer, it ranks as the fifth cancer when it comes to death amongst women around the world. And I wonder, Trudy, if that has to do with the fact that the early detection is more difficult. Maybe you can just speak to ovarian cancer, and looking at those numbers.
Well, I think the most important thing is that the ovaries are those tiny little things that live in our pelvis. They're surrounded by bone, you know, your bony pelvis. So they deep down there, and they also are exposed to the rest of your abdomen. So when you do develop a cancer there, you know, it easily spreads to, like, for instance, the surface of the bowel, the surface of your abdominal cavity. And there's this special fat pad that lives in your belly. We call it the policeman of the abdomen. Its medical term is called the omentum. And what that does is it hangs from your large bowel and it tries to clean up your abdomen. You know, when we were first made, there were no surgeons and no doctors. So it's a protection mechanism. So if you had an infection, that omentum, that policeman went there and it covered up that infection to stop it from spreading. But by the same token, when you've got cancer cells, it takes up all the cancer cells. So, you know, in trying to be the policeman. So it spreads very easily. And unfortunately, there's no good screening tool for it.
Sure. I mean, it's so interesting, the policeman of the abdomen. And I'm just looking at, I mean, some of the common symptoms that I've been looking at, which includes persistent bloating, difficulty eating, feeling full quickly, pelvic and abdominal pain, urinary symptoms. And I'm thinking of this policeman of the abdomen. Is it because, as you say, it would absorb more, so therefore you would have more, or is that just maybe not more of these abdominal symptoms?
So the abdominal symptoms are always the late symptoms. And you'll often find patients, they would have, you know, gone to the GP and the GP says it's IBS, and then they go to the colon, you know, to the gastroenterologist who does the scope, and it's all normal. Because they're very vague symptoms if you think about it. So the feeling of bloating and the feeling of what we call dyspepsia, or the inability to eat, feeling full very quickly, is once it is spread and there's now fluid in your belly and this policeman has taken up the cancer cells and become thickened, the omentum. So there's no real good, unfortunately, early symptoms, you know, maybe a little bit of vague lower abdominal pain. But most of those symptoms are when it presents already as a stage three or, advanced stage. And that's why patients sort of often go from pillar to post, because they're very vague.
Yeah. So for people who come for a regular checkup, let's say you once a year you go to your gynae and you're going for a checkup and you get the normal pap smear, would it be picked up in a pap smear?
No. So a pap smear is a fantastic test for the cervix. So that's the mouth of the womb. You know, that's that little thing that holds in your baby and is present in your vagina. But the pap smear is designed only for cervical abnormalities. And in fact, now we do what's called primary HPV testing. So we check for the virus that causes abnormalities on your cervix. So its ability to pick up an ovarian cancer is practically zero. You know, it has to pick up ovarian cancer cells is very, very low on a pap smear, because your ovaries are in your abdomen, they're not in your vagina. So the pap smear is just for the cervix. So the other thing is it doesn't even present with abnormal bleeding. But worst of all is you can go to your gynae today and your ovaries can look normal. And in 6 weeks' time or 2 months' time, they're not normal. Sure. And that's the problem. You know, we have no real test or screen for them.
Wow, that's pretty scary. But for when we talk about early detection, though, Trudy, I mean, you're saying that you could go and 6 months later something could happen. But what kind of test would be done if you go to your gynae once a year for a checkup? So you've said the pap test wouldn't pick it up. What would pick it up if you go for a checkup? In terms of trying to promote, you know, really getting people to go for their yearly or bi-yearly checkups.
Well, that's why, you know, in fact, they did a huge big study in the UK where they looked at 20,000 women and they did a transvaginal ultrasound. So that's the scan that we do when you come to for your checkup. And they also did a blood test. So many people talk about a blood test called a CA125. It's a cancer marker test, a blood test. It is a shocking test if you've got nothing wrong, because it can be raised for many non-cancerous things. Like if you had gastro, it will go up. If you have a fibroid in your uterus, it will go up. So it can also, by doing that test when there's nothing wrong with you, also create amazing stress when there's nothing wrong. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So that's why we say there is no good test for an ovary. And going annually also doesn't necessarily pick up an ovarian cancer. But what you can know is your family risk. So okay. In other words, we now talk about genetic ovarian cancer. Ovarian cancer, thank God, is very rare. It's actually not that common. It does kill many women, but it's not common. It's actually a very uncommon cancer. But it's much more common in patients with a family history. So in other words, if you carry the BRCA gene.
So maybe you can just explain a little bit more, because there's the BRCA1 and there's BRCA2, and we've discussed this before, that, you know, very famous Angelina Jolie, who she had the BRCA gene and then she decided to have a double mastectomy and to have her ovaries removed. If we can just explain how that works. And also, Trudy, when you talk about genetics and looking at your family, are you just looking at a history of ovarian cancer, or are you looking generally at cancer in the family?
So you look, first of all, we know that there are certain population groups that are at risk. So for instance, if you're Ashkenazi, your risk is a little bit higher. If you are Afrikaans, there is a strong, now we know, family lines in the Afrikaans community. And we have quite a strong Scottish family line as well. So, you know, taking a history, but it's not just ovarian. So there are a number of genetic cancer abnormalities. The two commonest ones we know about and people talk about is BRCA1 and BRCA2. So the BRCA gene is a very interesting gene. So that gene recognizes abnormal cells and destroys them and prevents you from getting a cancer. But if you have a BRCA1 mutation, your risk of ovarian and breast cancer is higher. And if you have a BRCA2, the risk of ovarian cancer is lower than BRCA1. So BRCA1 is number one for ovary and breast, but BRCA2 is very high for breast, but not so bad for ovary. But it's there. Do you understand? It's there. The risk is there. But the problem with the BRCA is you're also at risk of other cancers, like melanomas, a skin cancer. Pancreatic cancer is increased. Prostate in males. Breast in males. So don't just look at the females, look at the men as well. Wow. You know, and then there are other genetic problems. They're called a lynch. Sounds terrible, like being lynched, doesn't it? Lynch syndrome is a syndrome where you have a lot of polyps in your colon and you're at risk of colon cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer. So, and then there's an even sexier one called Li-Fraumeni, and that one is related to what we call sarcomas. So there's lots of funny little genetic risks, but perhaps the two commonest ones is the BRCA1 and the BRCA2. So, young cancer survivors, you know. We're not talking, you know, when I'm old, when I'm 80, my cells are old and I'm unable to repair them so well, so my cancer risk increases. But, you know, we're talking about 20, 30, 40, 50-year-olds.
Gosh. Trudy, we're going to take a break. You know, we have spoken about going for genetic testing. And it just seems to be something that I don't think we explore enough, especially having heard your explanation about early detection, the symptoms, and that if you would start testing and looking at your genes, you would probably have a better idea of what your health is going to look like in the future. Let's take a break and let's come back and we'll carry on discussing, ovarian cancer. Stay with us.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Well, welcome back to the DL Link Show. I have Dr. Trudy Smith on the show today. We're talking about ovarian cancer because the 8th of May is World Ovarian Cancer Day. A very interesting discussion, Trudy, talking about the importance of genetic screening, taking the necessary steps if needed. I am interested in also new treatments, but before we get there, just very, very quickly, I did read that if you have had a pregnancy, there's a lower risk of ovarian cancer. If you have breastfed, and please correct me if I'm wrong, there is a lower risk of breast cancer. If you have been on oral contraceptives, there's a lower risk. Am I off mark or is there any truth to that?
No, you're absolutely correct. So what's interesting is if you think about it, the ovary is a dynamic thing. So it has to work every month to make an egg. And when you're a dynamic thing, you have to repair yourself. Do you understand? Yeah. So, you know, if you're constantly under formation and repair, you've got risk of things going wrong. So hence women who are have what we call involuntary infertility or fertile problem. So in other words, women who don't take any contraception and are unable to fall pregnant, they haven't stopped that ovulation. They haven't quietened the ovaries. The ovaries aren't switched off. So that's why pregnancy switches off the ovaries. An oral contraceptive, combined oral contraceptive, switches off the ovaries. So that's what decreases your risk from an ovarian cancer perspective. So that's actually one of the risk-reducing strategies we do in somebody who we know carries the gene and is young. Then we would prefer them to be on a combined oral contraceptive to inhibit ovulation.
I hear
you. To make the ovaries quiet. But even more interestingly, we know the fallopian tube somehow speaks to the ovary and tells it to make a cancer. The women who have had a sterilization where the whole fallopian tube has been removed are at lower risk of developing ovarian cancer. So that's why now when we do a hysterectomy for another reason, say you're bleeding, and we take out your uterus. In the old days, we used to leave the fallopian tube and the ovary. Now we take out the fallopian tube and just leave the ovary because we want to switch off whatever that connection is, that talking to is, because we don't know what makes the fallopian tube trigger the ovary. Isn't it interesting?
It really, really, wow, it's fascinating. And in terms of breastfeeding?
So when you breastfeed, what do? You inhibit ovulation, don't you? So,
yes.
You inhibit ovulation. So that was one of the reasons why breastfeeding also lowers your risk.
Makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. Wow, Trudy. So let's look at treatment, because I think there's new treatment out there. I mean, there's always new treatment. You know, we often talk about on the show. In terms of the ovarian cancer, what kind of treatment are you looking at?
So the basic treatment, unfortunately, is to do what we call a pelvic clearance. So we would take out your uterus, your ovaries, your fallopian tubes. We would take out the policeman, the fat pad called the omentum, and we would take out any other tumor that we see. Then you would need to have chemotherapy. Chemotherapy is really the mainstay of ovarian cancer treatment because of its little seedlings that go everywhere, and you can't chase it entirely with a knife. But what we know is if you have the genetic component, if you have what's called a BRCA aberration, or one of the other genes, then we use a really sexy new drug called a PARP inhibitor. And basically what that PARP inhibitor does is that it almost like, let's put it simply, repairs the gene that recognizes abnormal cells and gets rid of the abnormal cells. So it helps your body to recognize abnormal cells and destroy them. So women now with ovarian cancer or genetic ovarian cancer get put on a PARP inhibitor. The problem is, like everything, they're so expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're trying to lobby to get it as mainstay treatment for our patients who have a genetic ovarian cancer.
Yeah, that often seems to be such a stumbling block, is these new treatments are so expensive and it takes the medical aides quite a while, you know, just from stories that I've heard, you know, when it has to do with stages and that kind of treatment that goes with it. So let's hope that you are able to make it more available, certainly at a more affordable cost, Trudy. And then I just want to ask one more question before we say goodbye, and that is... fertility preservation. So if you are young and you're talking about the young people who are getting it and you are removing, you know, everything, Is there a preservation at all, or do women who have had ovarian cancer have to come to terms with the fact that perhaps they won't be having children?
Well, you know, the one thing obviously is you can harvest eggs and use a surrogate for children. And in the BRCA patients, you know, we would, for instance, in BRCA1, we remove the ovaries. You can leave the uterus and remove just the ovaries and the fallopian tube, and then use the uterus as a vessel, you know, from a children perspective. But BRCA1s, we like to remove the ovaries from 35 to 40, and in a BRCA2, round about 45 to 50. So certainly in your later reproductive years, let's put it that way, you know. So, but if you have an ovarian cancer, unfortunately, because your prognosis is poor, you can harvest eggs, definitely, and you could use the surrogate. And if it's just an ovary involved in a young patient, we can sometimes just take the ovary and that policeman out and then save the uterus, which we've done. You know, then the uterus, you put your egg back that you've harvested. So there are possibilities, for sure.
Mm. Trudy, thank you so much for coming onto the show. I know how busy you are, but you have such a wonderful way of explaining everything. And I think it's been a really, really important discussion, and especially with the World Ovarian Cancer Day coming up on the 8th of May. So thank you. Thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm.
And look forward to chatting again soon.
No problem. Have a beautiful day.
Oh, thanks, Trudy. Take care. Goodbye. Dr. Trudy Smith, gynecology oncologist at Fitzdonald Gordon Medical Center and also senior lecturer at the University of the Witwatersrand. So May the 8th, World Ovarian Cancer Day. And it's all about no woman being left behind. And so, you know, as Trudy says, it's not a common cancer, but a lot of women do die from it because it is detected so late because of the symptoms. And we often talk about this genetic screening. I don't know how you're feeling about the genetic screening, but clearly, I mean, Trudy was talking about a whole lot of cancers that you can, not that you can pick up, but that certainly you can see what your genetic makeup is in terms of that, if there are any mutated genes or so. So really, really interesting.